Hey guys, welcome back to Hello, My Name is True Crime. My name is Kayla.
My name is Travers.
And we're back. We took a mid-season break and got everything together.
Ooh. Except for that.
Got everything together for the up and coming new year. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we are back and ready to rumble.
Oh, thank God.
Whew. Oh, yeah. So,
Welcome, everyone.
Yeah.
WWE.
If you are new here, we do body slams and whatever else wrestling entails.
Yeah.
Not really too sure because I'm not really a wrestling fan anymore. Although I used to love the shit out of Sting.
Me too. Yeah. Except.
Not the singer.
The police.
The wrestler.
Yeah.
No. I am dressed up for Halloween.
Did you really dress up like a muscly dude?
I did. I dressed up like Sting for a costume contest when I was like 9 and won $50 at the costume contest.
You won?
I won. Oh, I dressed up as Sting. How crazy is that?
That's pretty crazy. I dressed up like Arnold Schwarzenegger. This is totally unrelated. As Arnold Schwarzenegger from Commando one time. I was much younger. And we were trick-or-treating in our neighborhood. And there was this cold-hearted asshole. And she was like, "That are you supposed to be?" And I was like, "What?" I was like, "You can't tell? Obviously, I'm Arnold Schwarzenegger from Commando."
She's like, nice try. Better luck next time.
"You look like you sneezed all over your own face." And I was like, "You know what? You can take your candy and just shove it."
That's hilarious.
And it hurt, and it's still causing me issues to this day.
Oh, my God. Totally makes sense now.
Doesn't it? You wonder why I have like a I worry about, you know,
sneezing all over yourself.
Sneezing all over myself. You know, I was like, what if people think I'm like ugly or covered in snot?
And not looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Snot looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So funny.
Commando.
Oh my gosh, guys. I want to mention we have a new Patreon member.
Woohoo!
Ding, 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 ding. Welcome.
Yes.
Welcome to the
show.
Autumn Seltzer.
This is a shout out.
Yeah, Autumn. Woo!
Or thanks, sing Autumn. Out. Really?
Yeah, it's a little sing out.
Jeez.
Sing out. Sing out. I had too much caffeine. Actually, you guys, we are really excited today.
We are excited. Yes, very
we
much.
Have some news. We have some news.
I love nudes.
Today, we went and finished setting everything up for our very first live. So we have a live event coming up at the end of January. For any of you that live in Ohio or West Virginia or the surrounding areas, we are going to be doing a live event on January 25th. It's a Saturday. And the event will start at 1 p.m. So make sure to hop on our Instagram and we will have all of the details up there. And come and hang out with us.
Absolutely.
I'm
stoked it's on a Saturday because I was worried I wasn't going to be able to make it.
You're such a dick. Yeah, so. All right, guys. We better jump into the episode.
I don't think that we should yet.
Why?
Because this is fun.
This is fun.
I'm having a good time.
I am too.
You're so energetic.
I feel like we haven't done an episode in forever, and it's been a few weeks. So
yeah.
I'm like fiending to like get my podcast fixed.
On. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like,
gotta get my podcast on. Gotta get my podcast on.
Those
spirit
little,
fingers.
Those little like battery operated back massagers that just. That's what she's like over there in the
yes.
chair.
I'm excited. And okay, so just a heads up, the program that we are using for our surprise episode is a little glitchy. So with this episode, just make sure that you keep that in mind and kind of bear with us. It's not unlistenable, but it is a little bit annoying here and there.
Yeah, that's technology's fault. And
yeah, I think the Wi-Fi connection cuts in and out a little bit.
It has to be something along those lines.
But today we are doing something a bit different than any of our episodes that we have done before.
That's correct.
We are going to be taking a look at the Alyssa Turney case.
That's also correct.
And we have Sarah Turney coming on the show, and we're going to sit and talk with her about the details of Alyssa's case.
That's right.
Today we have Sarah Turney. She is the sister of Alyssa Turney, who went missing from Phoenix, Arizona in 2001. Is that correct, Sarah?
Yeah, that's correct.
When she was 17 years old?
Yes.
Their father is Mike Turney. He is suspected of being responsible for Alyssa's disappearance. Sarah has been Alyssa's biggest advocate, and she's done so much at getting her sister's story out there and keeping it in the minds of pretty much everybody. She's worked with so many content creators on YouTube and podcasters in efforts to tell Alyssa's story. So, Sarah, before we jump in, how are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. You know, it feels better to work for Alyssa instead of sit and be sad, to be honest. Like, this is definitely my active form of grieving, if you will. So I'm good.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And it's really an amazing thing, you know, what you're doing. And you're really in the forefront of it all.
Yeah, I'm certainly trying to be.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. So congratulations on the success of your podcast. You've done an amazing, amazing job at telling her story. I think it's something, you know, that it takes a lot of people to get involved, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And this has been, you know, a few years of build up. You know, I certainly didn't start with this large of a following, and I'm just so blessed to have so many people that care about Alyssa.
Right. No, it's awesome. Can you give everybody listening just like an overview or an update on Alyssa's case, especially the ones that really aren't familiar with it?
Yeah, absolutely. If you haven't heard Alyssa's story before, you know, she, like you said, she went missing when she was 17 in 2001 from Phoenix, Arizona. Essentially, our father picked her up early from school that day. He dropped her off at home after an argument about what they were going to do over the summer and how she wanted a little bit more freedom. And then she was never seen again. You know, and there's a lot of different facets to the story, but essentially, what I find out is that before my sister went missing, our father was obsessed with her. He conducted secret surveillance on her, video and audio. And I'm going through the 30 years of that now or whatever. But it's so much has come to light. So after she went missing, you know, the police almost did nothing. Not until 2008 when they really started looking at our father. You know, they determined that he's the only person of interest in this case. You know, that's still standing to this day. So they actually look into him, they get a search warrant for our home, and they end up finding the largest pipe bomb and gun bust in Phoenix history. And as far as I can tell, not anything crazy to do with Alyssa. But our father, you know, serves all this time for the bombs. And when he gets out of prison, I speak with him and he says, you know, come to my deathbed and I'll give you all the honest answers you want to hear.
Isn't, like, to me, that's like a form of admission in itself, isn't it? Kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely feel that way. And the thing about it is that's not the only thing he said either. You know, he later says, I will agree to tell you everything if the state gives me a lethal injection within 10 days.
Hmm. What do the police say about this?
I absolutely submitted it to them, like, literally the day or the day after I did it or whatever, because I did record it. And the commander told me to my face, she goes, well, Sarah, he didn't confess to us.
Wow. In your state, I know that you have audio with him. They're one party state, right? I think it's like that here, where it's one party recording state.
Right.
Yeah, it's a one party consent state. So if you're involved in a conversation, you can record it legally without telling the other party. And what's kind of amazing about that is that my father taught me that. So it's really coming back to haunt him, because that's what's so confusing, too, is like I wasn't abused. I didn't suffer the same abuse Alyssa did. I was taught, you know, what I believed was to, you know, to have good morals and do the right thing. And like I said, it's really just backfiring on him now.
Definitely. Yeah. So you mentioned, so he picked Alyssa up from school. Is that something that he did often? Like, I mean, did they often do things together like this?
No. So although my father would pick me up from school early pretty much all the time, like I never went to school. He was always picking me up early. Alyssa was the opposite. She had very, very good attendance because she wanted to get out of the house. So if she asked him to pick her up early, I would be really surprised.
Right.
And to be honest, the call records kind of seem to indicate something different. Mm-hmm. On that day, he calls her twice while she's at school and she doesn't answer. And then he comes and picks her up. So I have a hard time believing that, you know, she called him to ask to pick him up, because that call just doesn't exist.
Right. So you're in sort of an unusual position with this. You know, your sister is the victim and your father is believed to be responsible for her disappearance. And you're taking a stand for justice against them. It sounds like you really had no choice in any of this. Can you tell us how helpful the Phoenix police have been?
It's definitely a crazy, wild experience. But again, it goes back to just doing the right thing.
Right.
But the police, it's kind of a double-edged sword with the police, because as I go back through the records and, you know, of course, reflect on my own memories, I look back and those two detectives, there were two gentlemen that worked on the case for almost 10 years. Mm-hmm. And while they were accusing my father, while I still believed my father was innocent, I didn't think they were doing a good job. But now that I look back, you know, they conducted a very thorough investigation. I mean, they spoke with every witness you could think of. I mean, granted, they missed a few people, and I feel that no investigation is perfect, but I feel like those two gentlemen did a great job. But those two guys were reassigned like 3 or 4 days before my father got out of prison. So they were planning on prosecuting him, and then he got out and they told me that they were no longer going to do that, that those two gentlemen were reassigned. And that's really when the Phoenix police became extremely unhelpful and honestly at points really hinders what I'm trying to do.
Right. Yeah. That was actually going to be my next question. That was that Anderson and Summershoe? Is that who it is?
The ones that were on those the are the two gentlemen.
Okay. That I was going to ask how, you know, things have changed with the case being put in new hands. Has anybody else actually been assigned to it since then?
Yes. So, of course, it's always an active investigation for them. It's never been closed, if you will.
Right.
So they will always have some type of figurehead on the case. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes, that's really all it is. So, you know, right after Summershoe and Anderson were reassigned, you know, to which they actually lied to me about what they were doing instead, which is just infuriating. There's no need for it. But the next person assigned to the case, you know, I was like, hey, like, I'm so excited to work with you. How can I help? I would love to get on a phone call with you to discuss the case. And she says that she cannot speak to me on the phone and that if I have any questions, I can ask via email. The one time I met her, she kept her sunglasses on and said nothing. And they brought in Summershoe to tell me the news that they weren't going to prosecute. And he's the one that told me to get media exposure. And it's been like that with almost every case agent since. They just, I mean, granted, it's such a large case, right? Like it's 3,000 plus pages of documents to go through. But I'd say that not one person since Summershoe and Anderson have been fully briefed on this case.
That's really sad. I mean, I feel like the public alone probably at this point knows so much about it that it's kind of uncalled for them to not be taking action in to be briefed on this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, one of my largest, I mean, I hate to call it fights or whatever, but one of my largest arguments with them is that I emailed another case agent that was, he's been reassigned now. Gosh, I've gone through so many. But I emailed him and said, what's our status for pressing charges for sexual abuse? Because there are some very telling stories, you know, that Alyssa told people about being sexually abused. So I wanted to know where we stood on that. And he writes back, you know, I was told that there were no allegations of sexual abuse, to which my head explodes. And, you know, I respond, you know, I'm sorry, sir, but it was your department who released information about this sexual abuse to ABC 2020 in 2009. So I'm extremely confused as to why you're telling me that there's no allegations when, in fact, your department told the media this. And then they stopped talking to me for like 2 months.
Oh, my gosh. It's like a petty little like high school drama kind of.
Yeah,
to it,
they just
know, like, oh gosh, let's ignore her for a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they want me to shut up and go away.
Yeah, and that's absolutely ridiculous. If anything, they should be working alongside of you on this. You know, you're a family member.
It's backwards for sure.
Definitely. You mentioned the allegations of sexual abuse, and again, that was a question that I had. You know, if you could build a case against him alone just based on that, because it's not even just Alyssa, it was your aunts as well, correct?
Yeah, it was quite a few people that were close to my father. There's a lot of women who have come out and accused him of sexual abuse, absolutely. And a lot of them are in the family. Some of them are underage. And he has a pattern of behavior that dates back to the 70s.
Right.
Wow. So if I remember correctly, you had mentioned that your mother had taken, was it both of you to the doctor to be checked for signs of sexual abuse?
Yeah, so she did take both of us.
So she probably, do you think that she necessarily suspected him of doing something or just was suspicious in general?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know for sure. Of course, I have to lean towards it. It could have been our father as opposed to my brothers, but.
Right. No, that makes sense.
Well, and I don't believe it would be the biological father either, because at that point he hadn't been seeing Alyssa for, I want to say, at least a year.
Right, because he did. He did make allegations against Alyssa's biological father, didn't he?
Yeah, our father claims that that her biological father sexually abused her, and I don't believe it.
Do you have any contact with her biological father at all? Like, where does he stand in any of this with, you know, advocating for Alyssa?
I do speak with him. We started speaking about a year ago, I want to say. You know, of course, he saw everything in the media and reached out, and it's a difficult relationship, to be honest, but he wants to support the case, which I'm grateful for. You know, he stood up for me to the police. What the police started doing was actually only updating him about the case, and they stopped communicating with me, to which he said, absolutely not. You need to communicate to Sarah first about everything. So he will forever have that respect from me for that. Because I was going absolutely insane not getting updates and him only being updated. You know, he seems like a fine man, but he just came in our lives a year ago. He wasn't in Alyssa's life. I've been doing this for 12 plus years, and to not get updated, it just, like, crushed my soul and heart into little pieces.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I totally understand that. Do you think that he... Was he not in Alyssa's life because of your father? I mean... Because it sounds like some of the control started, you know, when she was young.
It's so hard to say. There are so many different theories and rumors coming from the family about what actually happened there. So I don't know. And to be honest, you know, like I say in my podcast, like I debate the relevancy of why. Like, you know, how important is it to the story? But our father did legally adopt Alyssa, you know, when she was, I want to say, like 4 or 5. So this man hasn't had legal ties to her since she was a very small child. And for what reason, I really don't know.
Right. No, that's definitely interesting. Besides the sexual abuse, there was, you know, mental and verbal abuse as well. And, you know, we see some of that in some of the home videos that you've posted and the audio on your podcast. The hiding of the video cameras around the house and him recording the calls and basically stalking Alyssa and recording her. Did this start before your mother died, or did it just get worse after? Just all of the control and the obsession with her?
So, I mean, the surveillance definitely started before our mother died. You know, he had been recording the home phone, every phone call going in and, you know, coming out since the 1970s. So the control factor and the surveillance was definitely there. But I think it used to be more so on our mother. You know, I have dozens of hours of tapes of basically my father just recording our mother and, you know, mostly her family just speaking. You know, he sets up a camera in the kitchen around the kitchen table and just records them for hours on end. And I don't know if, you know, that was to monitor their conversation, to which my aunts believe it kind of was. But I think that this obsession shifted from our mother to Alyssa after she died. And then with Alyssa, it really amplified because I think he was afraid of her telling the truth, to which she was telling everybody she could about our father. So he, you know, that control over her just got tighter and tighter.
Right. No, that I figured it was probably something similar to that I just adjusted the control from your mother to Alyssa. And that's really sad, you know.
It's sad.
And you were completely, I mean, you were so young that, you know, this was normal to you. So it wasn't like you seen all these red flags. You just, it was a normal part of your life.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and think about growing up in the 90s and the early 2000s. This is the era of sitcom television, right? And I was mostly raised by TV. Like, I was the child that sat in front of the TV all day, every day. So when I hear that my sister is drinking and smoking pot, I'm thinking of, you know, Family Matters and Saved by the Bell and the things that happen on these TV shows and these after school specials and thinking, wow, that's really bad. Right. And especially because I'm so young and I haven't experimented with these things yet, you know, I'm like, wow, she really is out of control. I understand, you know, our dad's just trying to keep her safe.
Yeah. No, I definitely totally understand where you're coming from with that. And He even drew up contracts for Alyssa to sign. Is that correct?
Yes, quite a few contracts, you know, and of course, one of the most disturbing lines in those is that he repeatedly made her sign that she was not sexually, physically, or emotionally abused, to which we can gather that all three of those things were happening.
Right. It's almost like he was trying to convince himself and everybody else.
Yeah, he's mentally abusing her to, you know, forcibly sign this.
Yeah, well, and it's confusing, right? So he's a very smart man, and he was very litigious, and, like, I spent a lot of time in law libraries with him, so he was so well-versed in the law that I find it really hard to believe that he would think that this was a contract that would stand up in court. But what I could believe is that he would tell Alyssa that it was and that she would believe it.
Right. She's so young. I mean, what difference is she going to know, you know? Was anyone else really aware of these contracts at the time besides, like, your brothers, which he made them sign a couple, correct?
Correct. So at this time, I mean, I wasn't aware of them, to be totally honest. But that's, I didn't know my brothers were, you know, so I didn't find that out until I went through the giant stack of public records I received. For a long time, I thought it was just him and Alyssa, you know, to which in earlier interviews, you'll hear me say, you know, no, the contracts were just between him and Alyssa, but no, he absolutely did it with our brothers too. So, you know, and there's joint contracts, specifically one between a brother and Alyssa. So I have to believe that, you know, they were aware.
Do you think he'll ever confess? I mean, It seems like he really, really enjoys playing mind games, and especially with you. And like you said earlier, he told you he would confess on his deathbed. In my opinion, you wouldn't really say something like that if you were innocent.
Right.
But, I mean, do you think he would actually ever confess to this?
The only way I think that he'll confess to this is in court. I don't think that he'll do it on his deathbed. He won't do it to me in a phone call or in a meeting or whatever. I don't think he's going to tell a friend. The only way to do it is to get him under oath. And I say that because in his bomb case, the judge really pinned him down and said, you know, Mr. Turney, were you in Vietnam? And, you know, because there's all these stories about him going to the military and Vietnam. And he says, well, the papers say I wasn't in Vietnam. And she goes, Mr. Turney, that's not what I'm asking you. Were you in Vietnam? Mm-hmm. And he finally goes, no. So, I mean, obviously, they're two very different accusations of lying and charges and whatnot. But I have to believe that some part of him gets very scared when he's in court. And he understands that his best course of action is to tell the truth, at least in some cases. So that's really my only hope, is that if he does confess, I think it would happen only in court.
No, I can totally see that, because he was a sheriff. Is that correct?
Yeah, he was a deputy sheriff from 1970 to 1974.
So he probably knows how serious it can be. So it's like a double-edged sword. I mean, he knows the law. He probably knows exactly how to get away with something. But at the same time, he should be scared. And he knows he should be scared.
Yeah. You know, and he knows it backwards and forwards. I mean, I can't always say that he makes the best choices in court. But, like, for example, for his bomb case, he fired his public defender and represented him.
Oh, wow. Wow, I didn't realize that. That just goes to show you what kind of a person he really is. I mean, he really thinks that he has got himself down. It's terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, he thinks he's the smartest man in the room. And, you know, to his credit, he's getting away with it now.
Absolutely. In your podcast, you lay literally everything out on the table. Has this affected your relationship with your family, or do they stand behind you like 150%?
So I do lay everything out on the table. I mean, there's honestly, there's a lot that I don't find super relevant that I don't put in there. But I do lay so much out. And my family, we all believe that my father did this, right? Like, I was the last of all of my brothers to come around and believe that our father was guilty of abusing and murdering Alyssa. But none of them support the podcast. No, none of them want to be on it. None of them want to be featured in it. None of them want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
It's kind of understandable, though, to a degree.
Yeah, I mean, I could understand that. But at the same time, it's helping. I mean, I think it's helping. I think it's putting a lot of pressure. There was recently a petition to reopen Alyssa's case, and that was amazing. It was just to see how many people really care and want to be involved in this.
Yeah, the petition's great. You know, it's a great show of support. I think it's at 250,000 signatures, just about. But the police told me, you know, I said, I have a petition with, I think at the time, 100,000 signatures. And they said, Sarah, we don't care how many signatures you get. That's not how this works.
Well, how does it work?
Exactly, right? How does it? No. And what I kind of told them is, okay, well, so I understand where we're at. You're waiting for new evidence to fall in your lap because you won't look for it.
Mm. Right. I mean, that makes total sense. And real quick with that kind of thing, can you explain to people what they mean when they said that you needed to get media exposure? Because then you did, right? And now they're saying, wait, like, this isn't good. It's not good that you have exposure now.
Yes. So when they told me they weren't going to prosecute, that's when they said, you know, your best chance is media exposure. And this is the gentleman that I worked with for 10 years. And the thing is that the Phoenix police has told this to other victims in similar situations. So part of me wants to believe that that was the detective being very kind and really giving me a route for success. But part of me thinks it's just kind of their way of telling the family to figure it out on their own and best of luck, because it's extremely hard to get this media exposure. But I did it, and I don't think that they expected me to get as much as I have. It got to the point where I went to them. I was asked by CrimeCon last year if I could do a panel with the Phoenix Police Department. So I went to them and said, great news. You told me to get media exposure. You know, CrimeCon is such a great avenue. There's so many professionals there, blah, blah, blah. And they said, no, we've done media for you in the past. We will no longer do it in the future. We don't think that this is the best avenue to get Alyssa's story out there. To which I responded, you know, I beg to differ. Nancy Grace will be there. Paul Holes will be there. Like, this is the exact audience we need to get it in front of. Absolutely. And they basically told me that they won't do media with me anymore. And then this year they said, we think you're getting too much media. Okay. And I wrote back and said, I'm damned if I do and I'm damned if I don't, but I'm not stopping now.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that is terrible.
What the hell does too much media mean?
It means I'm about to get them in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, they need to suck it up.
Yeah. And, you know, like, let's spin this a little bit. And let's say that your father isn't the one responsible. I honestly think that by putting this information out there, if there was somebody else involved in this, or even if he is and there was a witness involved, you know, that's seen something, putting it out there with all of this media can help tremendously. Everybody has a change of heart at some point in their life, and, you know, they can come forward with new information or whatever it may be. And I think it's a great thing, and it's a shame that they're telling you that, you know, it's too much and it's not good.
Right. It's like they're giving you something to reach for, expecting you not to be able to accomplish that, and then you show them that you can do it, and then they're like, oh, well, crap, that backfired.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when they told me that my best chance was to get media exposure, they said, listen, we're going to run a silent witness campaign. You're going to have a billboard in every freeway with your sister's picture on it. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, that's amazing. And then when I follow up with them a year later, whatever, and I said, hey, like, you haven't done a single billboard. There was like one radio spot. Like, this isn't a silent witness campaign. The commander looks me in the eyes and says, Sarah, who told you that they would do a silent witness campaign? And then she says, I can't speak to anything you were told in the past.
Oh, my goodness. Oh my God. I mean,
that's another question I have. Sorry to interrupt. But you've said, like, they quite a bit and things like that. And I was curious if we could narrow down who the person, like, the main person making these decisions, like, as to the media exposure being too much or not enough or whatnot. Like, who is the they? Because there's always the one guy that it comes down to, you know. Like, who is responsible for the answering?
I would love to know. I mean, and people I've referenced so far have changed, right? So the person who told me to get media exposure was Detective Summershoe. Mm-hmm. The person that told me I was getting too much was Sergeant Corris, who was just reassigned from the case. The person who told me that they couldn't speak to anything I was told in the past was Commander Christina Gonzalez, who is also no longer the commander in the unit. So it changes. I wish that there was one person that I've had consistent communication with for these past 12 years or whatever. But no, the case has been reassigned so many times. Leadership has changed so many times. The chief of police has refused to talk to me up and down. Internal investigations never go anywhere. I've never had one solid point of contact. You know, they say it's Summershoe, but they say, no, he was reassigned. They say, no, he was never reassigned, to which I show them the email, to which he says, I'm so sorry. We're no longer case agents on your case. You need to direct your inquiries to A, B, and C. So, yeah, who they is a, you know, a mixture of people that have been assigned to this case and told me to go away, essentially.
Right.
And it basically boils down to their own personal opinion and how they're feeling at that very moment in time.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And they can't really, I mean, they were on television, you know, telling you some of these things. So it's kind of difficult for them to go back on it without making themselves look absolutely horrible. You know, so.
I can't wait to release the audio where I'm like, oh, there's no sexual abuse charges. Well, what about that thing you told to 2020 about there being graphic detail about the sexual abuse that she talked about? And they're like, Sarah, no. It's just, it's so infuriating. But yeah, I mean, I recorded it and I will release it. Like, these are not small accusations that I make against the police. So I made sure that I, you know, had my my I's dotted and T's crossed and make sure I recorded everything. I mean, there were a few things that I didn't get on tape because I wasn't in that mode, right? So when they sat me down and told me to get media exposure, I thought that this meeting was going to be how we're going to prosecute my dad. So I didn't record it. And now that I'm requesting the records from that meeting, there's no video, there's no audio. So hopefully I can get the written report. But yeah, for the most part, I have some pretty solid audio to back up everything I'm saying.
Great.
Wow. I can't wait to hear it.
Me neither.
Yeah. I'm excited. And real quick, one more thing. So I know that it has to be so difficult with the police telling you that, you know, without a body, they have no case. And, you know, there have been many no body cases in the United States and in Arizona. So, I mean, do they really give you like a good reasoning for this? Have they ever said why?
No. So when they told me they weren't going to prosecute, they said we needed a body. And I said, great, when are we going to search for this body? Where are we searching? And they said, well, we don't have the resources to do that. And I said, okay, well, can I raise money for the resources for you to do that? And they said, no. Mm-hmm. And that's when they offered the silent witness campaign, you know, for a witness or whatever. But they just, they're uncooperative. I got an offer from a media company to give us cadaver dogs. And I said, hey, guys, you know, you said you don't have the resources. I have these people who want to do cadaver dogs. They will pay for everything. I think that these two spots would be the best place to look. What do you think? And to my face, they said, oh, you know, that's great. We'll look into it. That could be good. You know, these are very highly accredited dogs. This isn't like someone's backyard dog that they semi-trained. Like, these dogs have been successful in other missing persons cases. So they told me to my face, maybe, right? And then over email, they were like, absolutely not. No thanks.
Is there any way that you could just do this on your own without including the police?
Yeah. You know? Without funding, you know, just like,
I mean,
people
like,
that want to be involved can just come and help you. Yes. I mean, they can't. Can they stop that from happening?
I don't really think so. It is America.
So, correct. I can go out and do this. I can raise the funding and do searches and all that on my own. My fear is that I will waste tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people's dollars, possibly find something for the police to say, well, we weren't there. We don't know if it was tampered with. Look how much you feel a certain way about this story. Like, of course you would tamper with it. I want the police's cooperation because I don't trust them to take anything I've done on my own as evidence. I mean, even the call with my father, you know, or the meeting I recorded, they basically were like, yeah, we can't use any of this. We weren't there. Ugh. And I'm like, well, you also can't interview him. So what are we going to do? Like,
Oh my gosh.
What about the good old fashion video camera and just documenting every single step of all of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't work either.
Man, it's such a shame. And,
right. Yeah, it's sad. I mean, that I'm genuinely afraid that if I waste people's money or whatever, that you know, or use it, they lie about everything and they're so uncooperative with this that it terrifies me, you know? And what if we do find her body and then that evidence is like just lost forever? I don't know. It just freaks me out. I mean, worst case, you know, if I cannot get them to prosecute this through the traditional route, like I will do that, you know, if it comes down to it, if I have to. It's definitely something I've considered. It's just not plan A, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think that there would be so many people behind you if you did do something like
Absolutely.
That. I really do. I think that you have gained such an amazing support system with the public. And honestly, I think that the way that things are going, you're going to come out on top one way or another. I really do believe that. I think it's amazing what the true crime community can do for cases. Yeah. And I really think that Alyssa's case is going to be one of them.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I have to hold out hope that we will get prosecution. You know, there's all sorts of different routes to go about this. I could do a civil suit, you know, wrongful death suit, but I want the prosecution. You know, that's what Alyssa deserves, is just a fair trial. I'm not saying give him the death penalty. I'm not saying pin him to the wall. I'm just saying, where's the fair trial?
Absolutely.
Like you said, there are many nobody cases that have been prosecuted around the country, and a ton in Maricopa County, you know, and I brought that up to them. And in the last meeting, I'm like, what about Christine Mustafa or Jamie Leidy, you know, cases that are prosecuted in this county? And the commander looks at me and goes, oh, I'm not familiar with that case.
Read a book.
But then, like, later in the conversation, uses it to her. Like, it just... they know what they're doing, and I fully believe that there's something in this case that the police don't want to come out. Right. And whether that's just sloppy police work from 2001 to 2000, you know, 7 or 8, when they essentially did nothing, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't care either. It's not about that. It's not my dad. Like, this is about Alyssa. Like,
right.
Prove me wrong. Like, let's go to court. You know, they keep saying double jeopardy, and I'm like, he's 71, almost 72. Like, the family doesn't care about double jeopardy. We just want a chance. And if he dies, we'll never get that.
Right. Right. No, I totally agree with you. It's so frustrating. And my heart really goes out to you, Sarah. You have been through so much. And I really, really hope that you guys get somewhere with this.
Me too.
I do.
You're admirable. You're a champ. You're awesome.
Yes.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Like I said, I'm holding out hope that it happens. I have to hope for the best.
Yes. I think so too. Well, we appreciate you coming on. We are so excited to have you on our podcast.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited to be here. You guys are awesome.
Thank you. And can you give us like a little heads up on what your future plans for Voices for Justice is?
Absolutely. So at this point, you know, we just went through the timeline of the day Alyssa disappeared. So now it's all investigation, and I cannot wait to get into it. So I'm going to dive deep into what the police did and what they didn't do, and our father's behavior and my behavior, and everything that unfolded. And it's really ongoing, right? So it's going to go up to today. So I don't know how many episodes are going to be left because things are always changing. But near the end, you will hear a big case update from me and a call to action. So definitely look out for that.
Nice. Awesome. We're excited.
Yes.
We keep up with it all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. All right, Sarah. Well, we will let you go. And again, we really appreciate you coming on and talking to us today.
Yes. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, of course. Thank you.
All right, Sarah. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Again, Sarah, thank you so much for coming on our podcast and doing the episode with us.
Yes, thank you so very much. I apologize for being a little, you know, distant during all that and standoffish and terrified and, you know, starstruck and shell-shocked. No, too much? Okay. Just ignore all that. I was adopted.
If you want to hear more of Alyssa's case, make sure to check out the Voices for Justice podcast that Sarah does. It's really amazing. I am completely obsessed with the podcast. She does such a great job of just going through all of these hours and hours and hours of recordings and all of the physical evidence that she has. It's amazing. She's put it together so well. And she's just really dived right into this and kind of taken charge of the situation and is really on a mission to bring justice for Alyssa. So make sure to go check out her podcast.
Definitely. It is a must listen for sure.
You can also visit the Justice for Alyssa website, and it's justiceforalyssa.com. There's a ton of information on there. It gives her missing persons flyer. There's a bunch of information on the case. It pretty much just breaks down everything on there. Make sure to follow us on Instagram so you can get updates on everything that we are currently doing. We've got a lot of stuff coming up, and we're super excited about that.
We do, like, part two to the Hannah Overton case.
We can't forget about part two. Coming out soon. What? Oh, and we've got a lot of stuff coming up on our Patreon.
We do.
Oh, we've got some surprise episodes that we're getting ready to put out.
Some of it's still a surprise to us.
You guys really need to head over to our Patreon and become a member, because we've got some cool stuff coming soon.
We do.
Yes.
We will.
And
we are.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we appreciate you sitting down today to listen to Alyssa's story and to listen to Sarah talk. It was really an honor having her on the show.
It truly was.
We hope to see her soon at some of the podcast events. Also, if you are going to CrimeCon, Voices for Justice is going to be there. You can head over to their Instagram page and grab a code to get 10% off of your CrimeCon tickets. What? So, yeah. All right, guys. As always, we love you. Yes. Yes. Bye.
Bye. We do love you.
Yeah.
That was a Titancast episode.